Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Welcome to Warriors Off Court, the San Francisco Chronicles NBA podcast. I'm your host, Warriors beat writer Connor Letourneau, and today I'm joined by sports columnist Scott Osler to break down Golden State's Game 1 win over the Spurs. So Scott, here we are in an empty interview room here at Oracle Arena. We're fresh off the Warriors' 113-92 rout of the Spurs in Game 1 of the first round. And, you know, we just logged through what felt like a lot of press conferences, and we heard a lot of things. But obviously the big takeaway today has to be that these Warriors came out and did what you you know, if you're following this team, they did what you want them to do. They played like the group that won an NBA title last year, and obviously they're without Steph Curry, but you know, they were really focused and attentive on both sides of the ball, and that's really a far cry from what we saw from them this past month. But I guess that's the difference the playoffs make.
To me, this was a game that was perfect for everybody, because if you're like the Debbie Downer type, you could say, oh, just against the Spurs, and the Spurs don't really have anything, and the Warriors had to win big, and it was no big deal, and they could minimize this game. But really, the way I would look at it would be more the optimistic thing is they had to come out strong. The Warriors had to come out strong, and if they're going to make a playoff run, they got to establish themselves early, and they've got to come out big like they did today. They couldn't – just beating the Spurs by 3 or 4 points today, I don't think would have done it. They needed to make a statement. They needed to clamp down on defense, and they needed to play with great spirit, and they did. So to me, it was – even though it was a ho-hum game to a lot of people and maybe around the country, it was no big deal – I think for the Warriors, it was a big deal.
Yeah, and I think you saw like a renewed level of confidence really post-game. And because you talked to these guys the past week or so, and obviously they know how good they are, but there's a difference between knowing how good you are and actually being able to turn it on and show it. And the past week or so since that 40-point blowout in Utah to end the regular season, the constant question has been, are you going to turn on the switch? Are you going to turn on the switch? Are you going to turn on the switch? Are you going to flip the switch? And, you know, their general response has been, well, you know, we hope so. We know if anyone can do it, it's us, but we hope we can do it. We think we can do it. And the general theme post-game today was, see, we are what we said we were. We are what you thought we were. We're, you know, the defending NBA champions, were arguably the most talented, deepest team in NBA history. And, you know, they showed it today. I mean, let's look at the box score here. It was just dominance all the way through. They shot 54.3% from the field to San Antonio's 40%. They had 32 assists on 44 field goals. That was big, because if you think about it, toward the end of the regular season, they got away from kind of their movement heavy blueprint. They were playing a lot of ISO. They're giving the ball way too much to Durant in one-on-one situations, and getting away from what they like to do, which is spread the floor, move off screens. And what you found is when they're moving the ball like they can, Klay Thompson, shockingly enough, had a bunch of wide open looks and capitalized. He was 11 for 13 from the field for 27 points, which is the exact type of stat line you want to see from Klay. He doesn't necessarily get up a ton of shots, but he's efficient with it, and he's phenomenal at moving off screens and getting open. And today was a great example of the type of game you want to see from him. I thought it was also a good example of the type of game you want to see from Durant. No, he didn't go off for 44 points. He had an efficient 24 points on 9 for 17 shooting, and he did a really nice job of getting guys involved, had 7 assists. He was really solid defensively, 2 steals, and he also did a nice job crashing the glass. This team had 51 rebounds to San Antonio's 30 rebounds. Wow. And the thing is, I thought Ginobili, Manu Ginobili, who in my opinion might be one of the best quotes in this league, yeah, had a really telling quote post game where basically he said, you know, for us to have a chance, we need to do everything right. We need to play better than we even think we can play. We need to overachieve. Yeah. And they didn't do that today, obviously. They made a lot of mistakes that are pretty uncharacteristic of Greg Popovich coach teams. Really, in that first half, there was a lot of situations where they just weren't helping on defense, weren't getting fooled on screens, weren't switching quickly enough, and they looked a little bit discombobulated. And my biggest takeaway from this game was just the stark contrast in talent that these two teams have. Obviously, the Spurs did a nice job against the Warriors in the regular season, but as we've talked about ad nauseum, the Warriors were kind of plodding through the regular season. Now that these games matter, you're starting to see the Warriors' true abilities come out. And the reality is, on paper and in reality, this team is just so much more talented than San Antonio. Obviously, San Antonio is without Kawhi Leonard, but I honestly think this is the worst San Antonio team in 20 years, yeah, since they started their streak of playoff appearances. I mean, if you just look through this roster, there's some solid role guys, but I don't think they're even necessarily elite role guys. I mean, yes, you have LaMarcus Aldridge, who's an all-star, but outside of that, Patty Mills, DeJounte Murray, Kyle Anderson, Danny Green, obviously Manu Ginobili's well past his prime, Tony Parker is beyond well past his prime, and Pau Gasol's well past his prime. So it's not a roster that scares you. I think we said last week on the pod this was probably the best matchup for the Warriors. What do you think about just the state of San Antonio right now? And do you think that they have even a chance of testing this Warriors team going forward?
No. I'm just, you know, when you add this up, you look at the box score, which we're doing right now. San Antonio's got one guy who you would fear on offense, LaMarcus Aldridge. You know, Patty Mills can score. He can do okay. But LaMarcus is the guy that's got to score for them, right? Okay, he's their scorer. You look at the Warriors, they got like five guys who are in that category who, oh my God, this guy could go off at any time and get 30 points or 35 or something like that. And you just can't it's just a total mismatch. And sometimes I wonder why. I know Popovich is a coach and he's got that in him, so he has to get mad. And when his guys have lapses, which they had today in defense and stuff, it's right for the coach to get mad. But in a way, I almost want to see Pop just sit there and think, well, you know, we're doing the best we can. Yeah. Our guys are doing that. I'm not going to get mad at them because, God love them, they're trying their hearts out. That's kind of the way it looked today. Now, maybe it'll change tomorrow. Maybe San Antonio will make a nice run at them for a game or two. But, man, I just don't see it. In fact, based on today, if this series goes beyond five, even beyond four, really, but if it goes to game six, the whole world's going to say, man, the Warriors are in trouble. They couldn't finish these guys off in four or five.
Yeah, I mean, for this series to go longer than five games, I think the Warriors would really have to get away from what they did today. And to me, today was kind of a breakthrough moment today was a pivotal moment because I think game one in a playoff series, it's all about setting the tone. And I think you can really, you know, set the whole dynamic of the series with a decisive game one victory. And coming off, you know, losing 10 of their final 17 regular season games, that was the big question. And I think they hushed a lot of those doubters. And it would really surprise me if they didn't build on that in game two. I don't think there's anything strategy-wise San Antonio can really do that's going to solve the talent disparity. And, you know, obviously the Warriors are probably going to win this game regardless, but I thought I was really impressed with what Steve did, you know, before the game even started with his starting lineup. He supplanted Quinn Cook in the starting lineup with Andre Iguodala. Keep in mind, Andre was coming back from missing extended time with that knee injury. This was his first game back in a while. Puts him right in there in the starting lineup. And then also starts JaVale McGee against, a pretty small ball Spurs lineup. The Spurs had been starting Pau Gasol along with LaMarcus Aldridge. They switched it up and went with LaMarcus at center, Kyle Anderson at power forward, If you normally, if you had known ahead of time that that was going to be their starting lineup, you probably want to go with a small ball center, maybe, you know, a Jordan Bell or probably a Kevon Looney. But I don't think Steve necessarily knew what they were going to do. But he ended up going with JaVale McGee, who I thought ended up being a perfect matchup because he's actually a guy who does really well against smaller front courts because he's really quick for his size. He causes a lot of matchup problems. He's so unique athletically. He's able to get in space, and those smaller guys just don't really know what to do with him. And he had his way with him, especially in that first half. At 11 of his 15 points in that first half, really was just feasting on alley-oops and, you know, dunks and that sort of thing. And that's the type of game you want to see out of a JaVale. And Steve said straight up, I mean, I'll probably keep him in that starting lineup because why mess with a good thing? And I probably think the same is true for Andre. What'd you think when you first saw that Andre was in that starting lineup? I know I had to do a double take. It took me a minute to even.
I wasn't with you when I saw that, and I thought, I wonder what Connor's thinking about this because he sees the team all the time, and it shocked me. And I didn't figure out Kerr right away. I figured, okay, maybe he's doing this because he wants to balance the scoring out so that when the second unit comes in, he's got Quinn Cook, give him a little scoring off the bench, which probably was part of the thinking. But really, it turns out, as he explained afterwards, and I should have realized, his thinking was, we got to come out and put the hammer down on these guys defensively. We got to just stomp on them, smash their spirit defensively. And to do that, who's better than Iguodala? And also JaVale, when he's on, when he's playing defense, roaming the middle, that's a pretty good twosome to throw at a team if you want to play defense on them. And it worked out perfectly. Because Iguodala, as you can see, didn't give much on offense, which is a little bit worrisome. That's another topic. But he played really good defense, and the way those guys play team defense when they have all those guys, that's a pretty good defensive team. You know, Kevin Durant, Draymond, JaVale, Klay Thompson, and Andre Iguodala. That might be your, you know, Western Conference first all-defensive team or something in some ways. That's a great defensive team, and that was Kerr's idea. We'll just kill him on defense, and they did.
Yeah, I mean, there's always a lot made of his offense, but the reality is when they have guys like KD and Thompson and even Draymond and, in this case, McGee out there, they don't need a lot of offense from Andre. And you also have Quinn Cook coming off the bench and doing his thing. So, and today, Sean Livingston was nice with 11 points, really feasting on post-ups. But he did everything else really well, not just the defense. He also did a really nice job facilitating, obviously initiating the offense, had 4 assists, and only had 1 turnover in 23 minutes. So
that's pretty typical, isn't it?
For yeah. He ended up having a Charlie horse in the game, and Steve didn't seem 100% confident that he would play in game 2. I would be surprised if he practiced tomorrow. But they have to feel good about just the fact that they have that as an option now, that they've done it before, they've had success with it. Yeah. If they have to put Quinn Cook back in the starting lineup for game 2, I don't think they're going to feel uncomfortable with that by any stretch of the imagination. But it's just another tool to have in their toolbox until they get Steph back. And it was announced today that Steph will be reevaluated in a week. There's really no news there. Obviously, that means he'll definitely be out through game 3. But the chances of him coming back for even a game 7 seem minimal. I don't expect to see him back till the Western Conference semis. So it's just about figuring out ways to get through. And the reality is this is the Warriors team that I think we all have been waiting 6 months to see. They've had flashes of it. Right. You know, they've had a couple dominant games, but it wasn't like last season where they were just – barreling through teams. I mean, even when they won games, they were often, you know, just riding one big quarter. They almost were never stringing together complete performances. And for me, this felt as close to a complete performance as you're going to find, or as you found with this team in months. And like you said, it was really starting off strong defensively. That first quarter, I mean, it took them like half the first quarter to even get to 10 points, the Spurs.
But you see these guys a lot more than I do. But to me, what stood out to me early on their defense is just the switching was great. They were right on everything. They weren't getting burned. They were staying with guys. They weren't leaving people open. It was like sort of vintage Warrior defense.
And, you know, one thing that pretty much always happens in the playoffs is the coach shortens his bench. And Steve, even though he's the strength in numbers guy, you know, he even does that. And so today, the guys who kind of felt the brunt of that were Nick Young, Jordan Bell, and Zaza Pachulia. Those are all guys that have been in the rotation most of the season. Nick Young and Jordan Bell did not get in until garbage time. Zaza didn't play at all, which honestly surprised me a little bit just because he played Damian Jones ahead of Zaza. I don't think that means Damian Jones is ahead of Zaza on the depth chart. It was probably just a situation where he wanted to give Damian some playoff minutes in garbage time. And Zaza doesn't really need that at this point in his career. But it was still kind of interesting. And I think it also just reinforced where Nick Young is on the priority list at this point. I mean, Nick Young has played big minutes for this team over the past month since they've been so injured. But when it comes to games that matter, Nick Young has not proven that he is consistent enough to actually be on the floor in meaningful minutes in games that matter. There were a couple games this year that he could, you know, be blamed for having lost for this team when he had to play bigger minutes or had to play down the stretch. He's just not a reliable guy. He doesn't make great decisions. He doesn't have the highest basketball IQ. He's not great at defending. The one thing he can do is shoot the ball. But that's with this team, that's probably not going to be enough for you to get on the court when it matters in games that matter.
Right. Yeah, you still want him to – there's times out there where you want him to – okay, you got an open shot, but pass the ball because that's what this team does. Don't just take the first open shot every time. And he still goes through that tendency, even though, you know, he's tried, I think, during the year to sort of warrior up and be more like in their team style. But he's kind of – in the end, he is what he is, right?
No, completely. Completely. And – you know, it's always fun to do predictions. Obviously, last week when we did the podcast, or I guess just earlier this week, I said that the Warriors would win in five. What did you say again?
I said five.
Yeah, we both said five. Based off what we saw today, what's your revised prediction?
I'll say three. They'll win in three. No, I believe me, I've seen a million playoffs. I've covered a lot more. Going further back than you because you're a youngster, and so I know how crazy the mood swings can be in the playoffs from one game to the next. The team that was unbeatable wins by 30. The next time they come out and they can't play. I've seen it 1,000 times. It's more the norm that teams will have that mood swing where they play a good game and then have a hard time the next game. But I just don't get that feeling from this. The talent mismatch combined with the Warriors sort of reinvigorated mindset, just to me it reeks of a four-game sweep.
I completely agree. At this point, I'd be surprised if it wasn't a four-game sweep. I mean, it could always go five. You can never predict. You know, it's very possible that there could be a game three letdown in San Antonio and it goes five, but it's just so clear how much better the Warriors are than San Antonio. I don't think there's a larger talent gap of any playoff series in the NBA right now. It doesn't look like Kawhi is going to come back. Reintegrate him to everything, which is like a completely new team at that point.
Yeah, that's just not going to happen. And to me, with one sad thing, sidelight of this whole series is the fact that the two big guys are out, that Steph and Kawhi are out. And, you know, in the play, you want to see both those guys out here because Kawhi is a phenomenal player. We know about Steph, but Kawhi's a beautiful basketball player, and they need him. He's the key to their team, and without him, it's just not fair.
No, and that's obviously what we saw in the Western Conference Finals last year. You know, the Spurs were up 16.5, and then Kawhi gets injured in that third quarter in Game 1, and they're just not the same team, which is why it's so impressive to me that the Spurs won 47 regular season games. I think, you know, he's not going to be necessarily in the discussion because there were so many other impressive coaching jobs. And I think kind of people take for granted the Spurs almost monotonous winning and the fact that they've been to 21 straight playoffs now, which is unbelievable. But the fact that he was able to get this team that we've kind of spent the majority of this podcast kind of, belittling or, poking holes in, and got this team to 47 wins. In some ways, this team's the opposite of the Warriors. They knew that they didn't have a lot at their disposal most of this season because they only had Kawhi for 9 games. And so they tried to get the most out of every regular season win. They played hard. They did the little things right to eke out close wins, to get to 47 wins. The Warriors, they knew they were maybe too aware of the fact that they were the most talented team on the court most of the time and just kind of sleptwalked through a lot of games and still got 58, which I've written a couple times, probably the most apathetic 58 win regular season in NBA history. I don't know if you win an award for that, but so kind of looking ahead a little bit to game two, if you're Popovich, you know, what do you do? What's your game plan? What changes do you make to the plan?
Well, you can't do too much. You can put Pau Gasol in the starting lineup. Maybe that'll change things a little bit, give you a little more offense. You know, he's old, but he can still heat up and score 20, 25 points. So that could be one change. Other than that, there's not a lot he can do.
Yeah, that's the thing is, I mean, I think a lot of people, you know, say, oh, but they have Popovich. He'll have a great game plan for game two. And it's like, yeah, but at the end of the day, you have what you have. And it's not like there's any big revelations at this point in the season. You know what you have. The Warriors know what they have. You know, the Warriors know what the Spurs have. And so you're right. I mean, they can probably maybe defend. They can try to defend Clay a little better off screens. They can maybe start Powell. They can maybe, you know, I don't know. There's just not a lot they can do. And the reality is, when it comes to defending Clay, no one has really figured out how to stop Clay coming off a screen. I mean, that he's arguably the best catch and shoot player in the history of the game. You know, he has the quickest release in the NBA. I mean, there's only so many things you can do, which just reaffirms our point that this is not going to probably be much of a series. You know, and what do you think of the crowd today? I know our boss Al was here, and he seemed pretty impressed by it. To me, it just felt like, you know, a normal playoff environment. What do you think?
Yeah, you know, Kevin Durant came in the interview room afterwards, and he, you know, he praised the crowd. But it's funny, Durant is kind of a low-key guy anyway. But if you listen to that interview, he was like, yes, the crowd was very good. It got us into it. It really helped us get charged up. It almost like, you know, faint praise. And I'm not saying he didn't mean that, but to me it was sort of okay, yeah, they're into it. They let the Warriors sort of dictate the mood, though. You know, when the Warriors were going good, which they were kind of from early on, then the crowd got into it. If there were a lull, the crowd would be in a lull. So it was not a madhouse. It was fine. It wasn't like it was dead, but it was definitely not a madhouse.
Yeah, and I think we've kind of analyzed this game as much as humanly possible. The reality is, it was a pretty straightforward game. The Warriors looked like they should have looked, and the Spurs looked like a team that just can't hang with the Warriors. So it'll be interesting to see if there's any changes to that analysis come game two. We're going to be doing this Warriors off court a lot more in the playoffs. During the regular season, I admittedly was not great about it. You know, we did it at most once a week. We're going to be doing it at least twice a week, pretty much after every game, maybe even on off days. So be sure to follow us on iTunes if you aren't already and give us some feedback. We appreciate it.
By the way, after if the Spurs should win game two, can we erase this tape of us?
Yeah, no, we might need to. I mean, the reality is a lot can happen in the playoffs. I personally, though, feel pretty strongly that the Warriors are just so much better than the Spurs team. So we'll see. I'm looking forward to covering it throughout this series with Scott. We're going to be in San Antonio. We get to be in San Antonio for six
walk, baby. Here we come.
6 days. So if you guys have any, you know, restaurant recommendations, you know, anything to do in our free time, just let us know. Thank you.
This show is part of the San Francisco Chronicle Podcast Network. Our theme music is Thank You for Playing by Ryan Little, courtesy of the Free Music Archive. The show is produced by me and Fernando Diaz. For more Warriors coverage, you can follow us on Twitter at @Con_Cron and at Scott Osler. Check out all of our coverage at sfchronicle.com. Also, follow us on iTunes, and if you have some time, give us some feedback.